This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. June is Dairy Month, and Wisconsin, America's Dairyland, ranks second in the nation for milk production, first in cheese. The dairy industry contributes about $45 billion to Wisconsin's economy annually. And during this time, the industry has been facing some significant struggles with inflation, labor shortages, and other concerns with farmers' mental health. Today, we are joined by two Wisconsin dairy farmers who's going to talk about the future of the industry and some potential policy solutions. So welcome, Sarah Lloyd and Tina Hinchley.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thanks.
I'd like to start out by asking each of you to tell us a little bit about your farming operations. Tina, I know that you are joining us here from your operation in Cambridge.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about what that looks like for you.
So we are a family-owned and operated dairy farm. Recently, my daughter would be the sixth generation coming back to the farm as a graduate from UW-Madison and the dairy program, and we are milking with robotics. So we've invested in the future for her in robotic technology so that she has a place to come back to, along with doing the dairy farming. We also cash crop, so we're running about 2,500 acres, but I also host dairy farm tours, and I've been doing that for over 25 years.
And how many cows are you milking?
240.
Okay. And Sarah, you are in Columbia County, and you have a little bit of bigger operation, right?
Yeah, we are just outside of Wisconsin Dells. My husband and his family, we're three families on the farm. We're milking 450 cows. My husband and his brother and my in-laws, we just got our Century Farm designation for the old farm, so we'll get that at the state fair this year. So that's a big source of pride, 100 years on that farm. And we're a pretty typical Wisconsin farm. In 2002, they were at 125 cows, and now we're at 450, which is part of what we'll kind of talk about, is that just trying to keep up.
So, and both of you kind of classified as smaller Wisconsin dairy farms as far as they are concerned?
Yeah, I think the average herd size is around 160 now. So I sometimes characterize us as middle.
Medium.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's probably small medium.
You know, maybe.
It depends.
So,
Sarah, in your day job, I know that you are president of the Columbia County Farmers Union, and then also you work at UW-Madison on the Grassland 2.0 project. The Farmers Union and other dairy advocacy groups, I think you just mentioned, are a little concerned with the decline in the number of smaller family farms across Wisconsin. Looking at some of the data, the state lost 360 dairy herds, or about 5% in 2021. Since just January of this year, Wisconsin's already lost 127 dairy herds. That's nearly one herd per day. 17,000 dairy farms nationally lost over the last decade. Yet Wisconsin's total milk production in 2021 surpassed a previous record from 2020 by about 3%, and that continues a streak of annual production increases going back 16 years. So if we're talking about a loss of family farms, why is that so concerning if milk production continues to increase, Sarah?
Yeah, so I'm really interested in supporting and building a system of farms that is more farms and not fewer farms, just because I think from a rural community perspective, we're all economic engines. So I think about all of the other small businesses that we buy things from, fertilizer, the people that come and fix our dairy pipeline system, our fuel, all of the veterinary services. We're part of this important ecosystem. And when we lose one of those little economic engines, then that impacts all the other businesses around us. So that's a really big part of it. And I also think the environmental risk of having bigger and bigger farms, like you're concentrating the manure all in one place, and I just think that that's too risky.
Mm-hmm. So, Tina, you mentioned that your daughter is joining you in the family farm business. What does the future of dairy farming look like for younger farmers like your daughter?
She had a lot of young women that graduated with her, along with some other men as well. But looking forward to the future, she needed to have a place that was going to be forward-thinking. She wanted to make sure that she wasn't worried about spreading manure every day. She didn't want to have to worry about all the other things that we took prior to having robots. So I was actually milking 9 hours a day. And she said, "Mom, you can't keep up with that. And I'm not coming home to that." And she did some research, and she was able to do an internship. And she researched the robots. And with that, now we have the latest technology so that we can carry forth without having to work so hard. But every time the cows go through the robots, there's 120 data points, and she understands so much more on nutrition than what I do.
Technology's really changed it.
And yes, and she can do it, and everything is on her phone. It's a future for her, and this is something that she has embraced from little on, that she wanted to come back, but she didn't want to be the one that was, you know, milking the cows. And physically milking them in a tie stall barn is grueling, and many, many farms that are still doing it, it's hard work.
So, Sarah, can farming still be profitable? Obviously, if smaller farms are going out of business, there must be a reason for that.
Yeah, well, we can't get a sustained decent price. So that's really,
you know, price for milk.
Yeah, like the price that gets paid to us. So right now, prices are up. Well, so are input costs with all the inflation. But
an input feed, fertilizer,
seeds, everything that you need, fuel, all that is up. But I do think that the price is okay right now. But the problem is, if we have 5 years of bad prices, which we've had really devastatingly low prices for long periods now, I need 5 years of good prices to pull myself out of that hole.
And that's why we're losing those.
Yeah, and that's why you're losing, because people are like, I can't go on like this. And why would the next generation want to come in? If I could plan a little, if I could have some certainty and less volatility in my price, then as a business person, I can plan. So I could plan to invest in the robots, because I would know, okay, I know I can service this debt, things like that. So I really think that you know, having a better price and more consistent price would just help everyone, big or small, just plan.
So speaking of planning and the volatility of milk prices, we are looking at that volatility of milk prices right now. Month to month, it really can have a range. I think one of the worst years in recent history, 2020, a low of $13.20, ranging to a high of $22.30. So how do you plan as a business owner when you're not sure month to month how much money you're getting for your product?
This is where it's very scary. You do your best that you can. You're trying to figure it out. We have an operating loan that we get, and every farmer is going to get one. And the thing is, you have to figure out how you're going to make ends meet and get it paid back. We have diversified on our farm so that we would be able to handle some of these big bumps.
So you aren't relying just on that milk price.
Correct. So we have diversified, and so we have the cash crops. That's helping us, and that's actually how we were able to get the loan for the robots. But also, pre-COVID, I was hosting farm tours, and I had school groups coming out. So having whatever I could, because I didn't want to work off the farm. I wanted to be there. I wanted to be by the cows, and I wanted to work with my family, and rightfully so. You're operating a business. That's a multi-million-dollar business. I didn't want to leave the farm. I wanted to stay there with the cows and you know, do
figure out a way to make it work.
Right.
You are both part of a growing coalition of farmers that are paying attention to how do we fix this price volatility issue in dairy farming. I know there were a series of meetings sponsored by some dairy advocacy groups this spring, part of what's called the Dairy Together Movement. Sarah, can you describe what is the Dairy Together Movement? What's happening with farmers on that?
Yeah, so Dairy Together is a national movement bringing farmers and farm organizations together to demand some real price policy changes in the next farm bill. That's when we really need to push for it. And so it's asking for some common sense growth management. So so that we can control the overproduction of milk. So part of the reason that our prices are so low and all over the place is that we constantly oversupply the market. And this is about putting in a mechanism that's actually been in the Farm Bill drafts before and been pulled out for political reasons. So we're asking the Congress in the next Farm Bill to put in a growth management system. And we helped, we worked with the University of Wisconsin-Madison dairy economists to model out what could happen with this system. And we saw some really interesting results. Mm-hmm. And the good news is, in Wisconsin, we had both Farm Bureau and Farmers Union working on this together.
Two groups that sometimes don't agree.
Yeah, that don't agree, mm-hmm. because we all know that having many farms is important for Wisconsin, and stabilizing the price and allowing people to continue their businesses and bring the next generation in is critical.
Tina, did you attend some of those spring?
Oh, definitely.
What was discussed there, and what kind of momentum is there from farmers statewide?
So everybody has this, it's the feeling that we need better, we need more, we need stability, we need to do whatever we possibly can. And figuring out what will take the traction to get it to, for them to listen, and whether Congress is going to hear us, we're actually planning a fly-in, but there has to be some connection where we are able to make them see, if we are not here, if the dairy industry is continually failing, which it is, it's broken, the system is broken right now, we need to make sure that we can do better. And figuring out this system that has shown some inspirational progress of what can happen, we need to be able to share it and get people to understand why this is so very important. It's vital for our communities. It's vital for us as family farmers. But it's a spider web that goes out. And it's not just Wisconsin. It's nationwide that this would impact.
So your efforts are focused on that 2023 reauthorization of the federal Farm Bill. So the action is in Congress, and Ewan mentioned a mandatory program for managed milk production growth that would be your best hope for what could happen there. I was reading about this. It said that a lot of people are looking at this as the last shot to stabilize the dairy economy. Are things that dire, Sarah?
They really are. And I just look at friends who were in the pork industry, in the poultry industry, and even in the beef industry, you've just seen this incredible consolidation take place in those industries, and farmers and communities are getting the short end of the stick. And dairy still has, especially in Wisconsin, very distributed production, small farms, some big farms, but let's keep it that way. But we have to halt the rapid exit of especially the small and medium-sized farms. But we have to get a stabilized price so that people can run their businesses and make a livelihood.
So who are there winners and losers in the dairy stabilization plan? I mean, does it have the potential to pit small farms against bigger farms?
It could if people choose to want to run to their corners. The reason we called it Dairy Together is because we know that, I mean, big farms suffer also from low prices. Mm-hmm. They're just able to kind of run faster and make it up. But the program is specifically designed where you can still grow your herd. And actually, you pay an access fee, like a market access fee, but it can be shown that you're going to make that cost up within just a couple years, because by managing the growth of the supply of milk into the market, everyone's price is going to go up. And this is actually a savings for the government.
So it's supposed to be floats all boats.
Right, because we're oversupplying the market right now because we're totally uncoordinated and everyone's just trying to run faster on the treadmill to just eke out. To just not go under. And so this slows everything down, allows people to plan, gives everybody a higher price so that maybe people that might expand because they're just trying to get that many more units of milk out won't need to. And so that's part of the cycle that we need to get in, because we're in kind of a vicious cycle right now. We're trying to create a more helpful cycle.
Tina, you mentioned a fly-in. Who's going to Washington, and what are your hopes?
Farmers Union dairy farmers are going.
From Wisconsin and across the country?
Across the country. National Farmers Union is also on board with it, too. So everybody meets in Washington, D.C., and they help us create the same wording so that everybody's on the same page.
And you're meeting with congressional members mm-hmm. and U.S. senators?
Make your appointments, yep.
Yep.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it'll be good. We're going in July, and mm-hmm. In the coalition we have California, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, Michigan, Vermont, Maine. Mm-hmm. So we really have the wide group, because it has to be national, because this is federal policy. And it doesn't help if Tina or I reduce production on our farms individually. This has to happen
across
the country.
Obviously, the COVID pandemic was hard on a lot of industries, including the dairy industry. But Wisconsin farmers received some COVID relief payments. I know there's about $500 million that came to Wisconsin farmers in 2020. Some people have said that those payments contributed to some of the overproduction and is part of the problems that the industry is facing now. Do you agree with that?
It's quite possible, but I think if you look back before COVID, we also had this issue where we're always constantly increasing production, even when the prices are at this terrible low. Like if you look at 2015, 2016, I took
so
economics 101.
So the subsidies to farmers didn't contribute to that.
I believe that the reason why we got subsidies is because we had to dispose our milk. When the schools were not drinking it and there was no restaurants to eat our cheese, the cows make milk every day. So with that, when your milk processor says, you know what, you have to, it's 25%, you've got to cut back, you've got to cut back. And whether you're disposing it down into your manure pit or you're figuring out what else to do with it, it was a hardship. And the government recognized that those farmers, because you only get paid for what you sell, not what you dispose. So the government kicked us back with some extra money, and it did help us pay our bills. I don't know if people went out and bought more cows. I don't think so. I think they went and they paid their bills.
Subsidies
and with
were helpful.
Yes.
Yeah,
and that's
necessary.
Yes,
yeah.
It was definitely necessary. And I think that's why there was not three farms a day going under, which is what it was in the beginning of the whole COVID situation. Mm-hmm. And this, being that it was recognized by the government that farmers are in despair and that there is definitely a need for them to be helped, and that we can't lose our backbone. This is Wisconsin and nationwide, everybody that is out there. And it's not just milk. It's all the different products that come from dairy farming. Every good cow is a beef cow in the end. Mm-hmm. So it the cycle goes all over.
You know, COVID also exacerbated the mental health crisis, and there certainly is a mental health crisis among farmers. A 40% increase in the number of mental health voucher requests for the state between 2019 and 2020. The CDC tracks suicide rates by occupation. Farmers are more likely to die by suicide than other occupations. Across Wisconsin, 190 farmer suicides between 2004 and 2019, and that rate among male farmers is considerably higher when compared to men in other occupations. Do you see the daily stress experienced by farmers increasing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really think it's important that when people are struggling and hurting and in danger of hurting themselves, we have to figure out a system to support them. So the vouchers, things like that, it's good that we're able to support that in our state. But I go back to kind of the systemic problem of having all of the financial stress of, you know, possibly losing your family's life legacy. Like, that's heavy stuff. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that when we talk about farmer mental health, we're also talking about, like, finding ways to create price stability. Mm-hmm. You know, these policy issues around a livelihood for farmers are part of the answer to the mental health crisis.
Mm-hmm. you know, other issues that farmers obviously have to deal with are concern for the environment. The governor has set a greenhouse gas emissions goal of reducing it by 50% within the decade. Clearly, you know, dairy farmers are contributors to greenhouse gas emissions. What are farmers doing to kind of partner in that?
I think we all recognize the importance of water quality. We're drinking the same water our cows are drinking, but we're also, that water is going to our community. So with the programs that are available out there, for us, we have conservation strips, making sure that the rainwater is not washing any topsoil. We're using precision planting. We have nutrient management programs. A lot of the issues that are around our farm, it's basic sustainability that we have to be in control of what we're doing. And with the whole sustainability environmentally, making sure that we're taking care of the air and the water is also taking care of our community, but it comes right back to it. We have to be economically sustainable. If we can't afford that updated equipment, if we can't afford to have these new programs to be able to help us farm better, it doesn't make sense.
It's hard to fully partner in those sustainability
exactly.
efforts. Tina mentioned water, Sarah. 90% of nitrates in groundwater come from agricultural sorts of inputs. Are farmers getting enough support around how to deal with issues like nitrates in groundwater?
Yeah, I think there's some supports available through state and federal programming. I think our state's farmer-led watershed groups are great way because then people can work around a specific watershed. So I know that the Department of Agriculture is helping those groups do that together, because it doesn't really help if like one farm does it here and one farm does it there. If you want to actually move the needle, you got to kind of do it together in your watersheds. You know, the federal government has put out like some climate smart commodity challenge grants, the Evers administration. I think the climate and the water issues that farmers can really be part of the solution. But I do think that once again, the bigger farms may more easily access some of these new markets. If you think about carbon markets, or you think about potentially like water quality trading, which actually happens in this state, where people can do phosphorus runoff improvements on a farm, and then a municipality can kind of buy that credit. So that exists. But again, the bigger entities figure it out, and they can hire the consultant to like figure it out, whereas small farms may have more difficulty accessing that. So I think in any of these new opportunities, we need to make sure that all farms can access the benefits.
I know that labor shortages is another issue of concern for farmers. Tina, I was looking on your farm website. You're recently looking for a dairy herd assistant. I don't know if you filled that position, but what is the workforce shortage look like? What does it look like for farmers?
It's dismal. There's not very many people that want to work. And we were able to get high school students in the past. And I was just reading somewhere that there's only like 30% of high school students that are wanting to get a job right now. And when my kids were in it, and that's just what, not so long ago, my daughter's 24, a good portion of their friends, they were out working on farms, they were doing stuff. And when I grew up, we were doing it. But
not anymore.
And that also comes into the whole immigration reform. There's essential workers that are working on farms all throughout Wisconsin and all throughout the United States. And we need to make sure that they have a place here too. And it's part of the dairy industry. They are filling the voids. And it's not just big, big farms. It's medium size. And I've had a few that applied at our farm too. However, they need housing. They need other things that I can't accommodate, where other bigger farms would be able to do that. But we do have issues. They're intense.
Is immigration reform going to be another thing that you talk about in Washington to our congressional members?
Yeah, well, I don't know if we're really wanting to concentrate on this price policy, but we cannot ignore the fact that we have essential workers on our farms across the state, across the nation, and because of our inadequate immigration law that's just kind of always kicking the can down the road, we have created a vast vulnerability for people primarily from Mexico, Central America, that are performing really critical tasks on our farms at a time when we are not finding U.S.-born workers.
Something has to change.
Something has to change. I mean, the robot angle is there, but you still do need some people to do things. And so I think that this is part of the overall picture of how can you make a going business of producing food? And what we saw with COVID, too, is look at how vulnerable our food system is to massive disruption. And I think it's all the more reason for us to really figure out regional food systems that can support farmers and workers and get good food to eaters. So that's, you know, a nice little package. But we need to have, like, things cost money. So we need to have
back to
a price.
The stable pricing.
Yeah, we really need people to be able to know that they can make a living.
You mentioned the robots. You talked about how your farm has robots. I want to talk a little bit about the new technologies that are out there in farming, because I'm guessing when somebody steps on your farm and they hadn't been on a farm for 10 years, things look a little bit different. Tell me, what are some of the new technologies that people might be surprised about in dairy farming?
Well, first off, that the robots are able to fully milk a cow from start to finish, all the prep work that is performed typically by a laborer or a husband or me is all done by the robots. We also have feed pusher inners, which ours is called a Juno. Keeping that feed in front of the cows is going to keep those cows eating and producing more milk. If you didn't have that, we were pushing it in, and this is the other part. It's physical. It's very, very physical. We actually have a manure storage pit underneath our barn, and there's these little bitty, they're called discoveries, but it's like a Roomba that just pushes that manure right down the slats, and it just goes on its little
Roomba
route.
For farms.
Oh, my gosh, and this is it. And people come out, and they're amazed. But also just our GPS and our tractors. The GPS knows exactly where we're at when we're planting. The precision planter knows exactly where the seeds need to go, and it won't overplant, saving us a lot of money and making sure that we are sustainable by not over putting down extra fertilizer if we don't need to, and making sure that everything that we've got going is fuel economy. There is so much going on that we're actually... My husband just said, I think the robots are probably going to be out of date in a little bit, which, you know what, this is it, all the technology. There's constantly updates on our phone about what we have to do, but the genetics, everything that goes into making a great cow, Wisconsin, we just rock at it. We are so good, and this is one of the reasons why, even with less farms, our farms are still able to produce the same amount of milk or even more, because...
And that your daughter wants to be in the business, too.
Exactly.
That says a lot. So we mentioned at the top of the show it's June Dairy Month, so there will be people visiting farms. We're going to put up a slide where people can find the website with June Dairy Month activities. Yes. So, Sarah, what should people be learning during June for Dairy Month?
Well, you should definitely sample all the possible dairy products you can. And I just think about the dairy breakfasts. If you can go to them, they're so much fun, and people do such a nice job. You just hosted last year for Dane County. I encourage people to do that. Go find a cheese maker that, you know, lets you sample and things. And I just think Wisconsin has great products.
Okay, last question. Your favorite cheese?
Oh, I like the Gouda that Marijke makes that has the fenugreek in it.
Favorite cheese?
I like hard, hard, hard cheeses. I like Parmesan. I like all the hard ones.
I'll say Havarti.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Thank you both for joining us, and happy June Dairy Month.
Thank you.
And thank you to our viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we sit down with the decision makers and highlight the issues that impact all of us.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.